Welcome back, everyone. Ready for another deep dive?
Always.
Awesome. Today, we're going back to 1066.
Ah, 1066, a pivotal year.
But we're not talking about the Norman conquest.
Not the Normans.
Nope. Today, it's all about the Norwegian invasion of England. And we're using this book, The Norwegian Invasion of England in 1066, as our guide.
Fascinating. That event often gets overshadowed, doesn't it?
Absolutely. But it's so important, not just for understanding this one year, but for grasping the end of the Viking Age.
A turning point in history, for sure.
To really get this, though, we need to set the stage right. The relationship between England and Scandinavia, it wasn't exactly a friendly one.
Complicated is a good word.
Right.
England had been a target for Scandinavian raids for centuries.
Centuries, wow.
By the late 10th, early 11th centuries, those attacks. Relentless, just constant pressure on England, weakened them, left them vulnerable. Imagine, you know. The constant threat. These fierce warriors coming from across the sea attacking your home.
It sounds chaotic.
Yeah.
And wasn't that around the time of King Ethelred the Unready?
Yes. The nickname's not exactly a compliment, is it?
It kind of speaks for itself.
It does. Ethelred, he struggled, really struggled to defend the kingdom. And that just added to this whole atmosphere of, you know, instability.
Right. But then we have Knut the Great. This Danish king unites England and Scandinavia. What a twist.
It's a remarkable turn of events. Goes to show history's full of surprises.
It really is. But how does Knut the Great, unifying everything, how does that tie into this Norwegian invasion decades later?
Well, see, even after Knut died and the English crown went back, you know, a more traditional line with Edward the Confessor, those Anglo-Scandinavian connections, the institutions they built, they stuck around. And that's where Harald Hardrada comes in.
Harald Hardrada. This guy, I've got to say, it sounds like a legend.
Larger than life, that one.
Exiled at 15, mercenary, commands the Varangian Guard in Byzantium. Is this all real?
Oh, his life was anything but ordinary. Those years in Byzantium, especially, intrigue me. Stories of him maybe not getting rich in the most legitimate ways.
Oh, tell me more.
Rumors, even, of a romance with the Empress Zoe herself.
Wow. Okay, that's a story for another time.
Definitely.
But back to Norway, what kind of king was Harald?
He was ambitious,
yeah.
Ruthless, consolidated his power, crushed rebellions, modernized Norway even. There's this chilling story, actually, about how he treated Einar and Eindrigi. They were descendants of a rival. Showed just how firmly he held onto power.
So, not someone you'd want to mess with. But this invasion of England, it wasn't just a random power grabber.
No. That link to Knut the Great, that's key here. Harald genuinely believed he had a claim to the English throne.
That is fascinating.
It fueled his ambition, gave him a reason in his eyes to take what he saw as rightfully his.
While this is all brewing, what's happening in England? Are they just sitting ducks?
Not quite. We've got to talk about the Godwins, powerful family.
Okay, the Godwins.
Godwin himself, Earl of Wessex. He'd woven his family right into the heart of English politics. His daughter, married to Edward the Confessor.
Whoa.
Talk about ambition,
yeah,
right?
But something tells me it's not all smooth sailing within the family.
You'd be right. The Godwins, full of internal conflict. We've got two sons, Harald Godwinson, the future king, and Tostig. They're at odds. Tostig, Earl of Northumbria, gets exiled because of a rebellion. And guess who's involved in that?
Hell.
His own brother, Harald. Shakespearean, isn't it?
Totally. Brother against brother, ambition, exile. What even caused their rift? Are the sources clear on that?
That's where it gets interesting. The sources are a bit murky, honestly, on their relationship. Different interpretations about what was at the root of their conflict.
Okay, so room for debate.
Exactly. We can analyze their personalities, their motivations. Was it pure political ambition? Sibling rivalry? Personality clash, you tell me. It's worth thinking about.
I like that. So, vengeful Tostig, exiled. And Harald Hardrada, ready to make his move, set the scene for us. What kind of forces are we talking about here?
On Harald's side, hardened warriors, of course, and famously, the berserkers.
The berserkers. Weren't those the almost mythical Viking warriors?
Yeah.
Known for just insane fighting? Didn't they go into some kind of trance?
Exactly. The berserkers, they entered these trance-like states.
Oh.
Rituals, adrenaline, maybe even something more mystical. You can just imagine the terror they must have inflicted on their enemies. But the English, they had their own strengths, of course.
Sure. Like what?
House Carls, elite warriors, professionals, and the Farald, the militia, made up of free men.
So a clash of styles. Disciplined English, versus the ferocious Vikings. It's almost like a movie, isn't it?
It really is. And this is where Tostig, that strategic mind of his, comes in. He wants revenge on his brother, right? So he launches these attacks along the southern coast of England, but they're diversions, carefully planned, meant to draw Harold Godwinson's attention away from the main Norwegian force up north.
Classic bait and switch.
Exactly. And it works, to an extent. He even fights the English at Lindsay. Officially, he's defeated. But some historians think maybe that was deliberate.
What?
Like, he threw the fight.
Maybe. Maybe to assess English strength tactics. A feigned retreat, even. He was playing mind games.
Clever. So while Tostig's causing chaos down south, where's Harold?
Biding his time. Waiting with the main force up north. Ready to strike when the moment's right. And that moment comes at the Battle of Fulford Gate.
Fulford Gate. Okay. But before we get into that, you said those attacks were to draw Harold Godwinson south. Did Harold even know about the Norwegians up north at this point?
That is the question. And honestly, the sources aren't totally clear on the timeline.
Yeah.
It's possible Harold just completely underestimated the Norwegians at first, focused on Tostig. Or maybe he knew, but thought he could deal with Tostig quickly, then turn north.
Either way, focusing on Tostig had consequences.
Big ones.
Every move in this story seems to set off a chain reaction.
It does, doesn't it?
Okay, so Fulford Gate, what happens there? Well, things take a turn, a big turn. The Norwegians, led by Harald Hardrada himself, clash with the English. Earls Edwin and Morkur are leading the English forces.
Yeah.
Decisive victory for the Norwegians.
The English get crushed.
Pretty much. The sources talk about Harald Hardrada's land waster banner appearing on the battlefield, you know, powerful symbol, reminder of his ruthlessness. Must have had a psychological effect on the English.
It's crazy how symbols like a banner can impact a battle.
They absolutely do. So the English are reeling. What do?
I'm on the edge of my seat.
Well, news reaches Harold Godwinson, right? He's still dealing with Tostig, but he gets word about Fulford Gate and realizes this is serious. So he does what any good leader would do. He gathers his forces and starts marching north. Fast.
He didn't mess around, but was that risky? Leaving the south open? Weren't the Normans still a threat?
Oh, absolutely a gamble. He must have been super confident he could crush the Norwegians quickly, then turn back to deal with the Normans. Or maybe it was desperation. You know, the Norwegian threat was too big to ignore. Either way, a decision that would change everything for England.
Wow. So we've got Harold racing north, Harold waiting. It's all building to Stamford Bridge, right? That legendary showdown.
It is. But before we jump into that epic battle, we should really delve into the people at the heart of all this. The motivations, the ambitions, the messiness of it all.
I'm all for it. Let's unpack these historical figures, their choices, in part two.
It really adds another layer, doesn't it? To think about the people behind the events.
Totally. Turns history from just dates and names into something much more real.
Exactly. Human choices driving the fate of nations.
Let's start with Harald Hardrada. He had that claim to the English throne through Kenneth the Great, but was he serious about it, or was it just an excuse for a power grab?
It's tricky, I think. It was probably a bit of both. Harald, he was ambitious, no doubt about it, but he also lived in a time when lineage, your ancestors, that meant something.
Right, it gave you legitimacy.
Exactly. So he might have believed, honestly believed, he was the rightful heir. A descendant of Canute, so the English throne should be his.
So it's ambition,
yeah,
but with a like a cloak of legitimacy.
Perfect way to put it. He used it to rally support, justify the invasion, maybe even convinced himself it was the right thing to do.
Clever strategy.
Yeah.
Okay, what about Tostig? He's fascinating. This burning desire for revenge against his brother. But there had to be more to it than just personal grudge, right?
Oh, yeah. Tostig was powerful. A warrior, a politician. Losing Northumbria, that wasn't just a personal blow. It was power, status, everything he'd worked for, gone.
So revenge, sure, but also reclaiming what he'd lost.
Right. He wanted to prove himself to his brother, to everyone, show them he wasn't someone to be just cast aside.
Almost like rewriting his own story. Then we've got Harold Godwinson, caught in the middle. He's often seen as the hero, defender of England. Was he really all that virtuous?
Remember, history's never black and white. Harold was a good leader, a brave warrior, but he was also playing the political game. Like, his role in Tostig's exile, that shows he wasn't afraid to use any means necessary to secure his own position.
So less of a saint, more of a pragmatist.
Yeah. Tough choices, impossible situations. He did what he had to do. duty, ambition, maybe a bit of ruthlessness mixed in.
Everyone in this story's got shades of gray to them. Makes it even more interesting, I think.
Definitely. Reminds us that history's made by people, you know? Real people, with all their flaws and complexities.
Okay, back to the lead up to Stamford Bridge. Harold's racing north. What's the mood like in England at this point? Are people freaking out?
Oh, you know there's tension. Big time. News travels fast, even back then. Defeat at Fulford Gate. Everyone's hearing about it. Fear, anxiety. But Harold marching north? That's a glimmer of hope.
A nation on edge, watching and waiting.
Exactly. And meanwhile, Harold Hardrada, he's fresh off a win, heading for York, feeling confident. He even sent for reinforcements from Recall, right?
Right, you mentioned that before. Why were they so important to him?
Well, he probably realized, yeah, Fulford Gate was a win, but can't get complacent. The English were tough. He needed to solidify his position, be ready for whatever came next.
So more troops to face Harold Godwinson.
Exactly. Preparation is key.
Little did he know what Harold had in store for him.
Oh, yeah. Stamford Bridge. Things were about to get real.
Finally, that epic showdown. Mm. What happened when those two forces met?
Well, Harold, after that crazy march, he surprised the Norwegians. Big time. They were camped out near Stamford Bridge, relaxed, some even unarmed.
They thought they had more time.
Seems so. And the English, they were pumped. Ready to defend their land, maybe a little vengeance mixed in, too.
Understandable.
So they attacked, ferociously, caught the Norwegians completely off guard.
And this is where we get that story, about the lone berserker defending the bridge. Is that real, or just a good story?
Probably a bit of both, honestly. But it says something, doesn't it, about how fierce those berserkers were.
It's a crazy image. One guy holding off an entire army.
Right. Fueled by rage, loyalty, who knows. Whether it happened exactly like that or not, it shows the impact they had. The berserkers, they were symbols of chaos, you know, unstoppable force, terrifying to face.
I bet. So even if the details are fuzzy, the effect was real. But the battle itself, did the English just dominate the whole thing?
Not exactly. It was a surprise, but the Norwegians, they were experienced warriors. They regrouped, fought back. It was brutal, both sides. Desperate, courageous. You know, Harald Hardrada had called for those reinforcements.
Right, right. Did they ever show up?
They did, but not how Harold hoped.
Oh, no. What happened?
They rushed in, eager to help while the battle was raging, but they made a mistake. A big one.
What was it?
No armor.
No armor? Are you kidding me? They made the same mistake as the others, just assumed they wouldn't need it?
It's hard to say why exactly. Maybe they underestimated the situation. Maybe they just forgot in the rush, but it was a fatal error.
Wow.
The English saw that, and they capitalized on it. Cut them down. Brutal.
Even the best warriors? They're still human. Mistakes happen.
Especially in the chaos of battle. And that was a turning point. For the English, they started gaining the upper hand.
So, things are looking bad for Harold. What does he do?
Well, he sees his forces struggling, the reinforcements failing, and he does something that shows his true nature. He charges right into the heart of the English army.
Whoa. Brave or crazy?
Maybe both. He was a warrior king, led from the front.
Yeah.
Maybe he thought if he showed courage, it would inspire his men.
Or maybe he knew he was losing and decided to go out fighting a warrior's death.
Could be. But that charge, it was a defining moment in the battle.
And that's when he's killed, right? The famous arrow to the throat.
Yes. Surrounded, fighting bravely, an English archer gets a clear shot right through the throat. End of Harald Hardrada. End of his invasion.
What a way to go. What about Tostig? What happens to him after Harald's killed?
Tostig, seeing his ally fall, knowing the battle's lost, he keeps fighting, refuses to give up, and in the end, he dies on the battlefield, just like his brother.
Wow, what a story. Both brothers, driven by ambition, by betrayal, and meeting the same fate. But what about the bigger picture? What does the English victory at Stamford Bridge mean for England, for the Vikings, for history itself?
Stamford Bridge, it was a turning point. It marked the end, really, of the Viking Age in England. No more large-scale raids. But it was a costly victory. The English army, they were drained, exhausted, and they had another challenge coming. The Normans.
Right, William the Conqueror. It's almost like Stamford Bridge was just the beginning.
In a way, it was. The struggle for England was far from over. And this victory, it changed the cultural landscape, too. Everything was shifting.
We were talking about Stamford Bridge, the end of the Viking Age. What did that transition actually look like? Was it a sudden stop or more of a gradual thing?
It's a process, isn't it? Like, history doesn't just have these hard stops and starts. The Viking Age, it was centuries, right? And it was already changing. The raids were less frequent, and Scandinavian rulers, they were more about building kingdoms, less about just plundering.
So Stamford Bridge, it was like the final chapter, not the whole story.
Exactly. It was a decline of Viking military power in England, and it signaled this new era coming in, the Normans, a strong central monarchy, all that.
And this new era,
yeah,
it wouldn't have happened without Harold Godwinson's victory at Stamford Bridge.
Yeah.
Even though it really took a toll on him, his army was depleted, exhausted, and then just days later, he has to face William the Conqueror at Hastings. It makes you think, what if he'd had more time to recover, prepare?
Those what ifs of history. It's fascinating to think about. I mean, yeah, it's possible. A fresh English army, maybe they could have put up a better fight against the Normans. Who knows?
History's full of those moments, isn't it?
Yeah.
Where one battle, one decision just ripples outward and changes everything.
Oh, for sure. Butterfly effect in action.
Speaking of decisions, we talked about Harald Hardrada's claim to the English throne. Was there anything to it? Or was it just a power play?
It's complicated. His family, his lineage, it connected him back to Cnut the Great. And that mattered back then. Dynastic ties, they were important. It gave him some legitimacy.
Right. Cnut had ruled England. It wasn't unheard of for a Scandinavian king to be on the English throne.
Exactly. But the English, they had their own system, too. Harald's claim was weak, to put it nicely. He probably used it more as justification. Rally his troops, make the invasion seem more legit.
A smart move, even if it wasn't exactly legally sound. How did the English people feel about him? Did they buy it? Or was he just a foreign invader, plain and simple?
The sources I've read, they paint him as an outsider, a threat. I mean, the English had been fighting off Vikings for centuries, right? So Harald Hardrada, even with his claims of lineage, he was probably just another Viking trying to take over.
It's amazing how history clashes with people's personal ambitions. Harald, maybe he believed in his claim, truly believed it. But the English, they saw him as the enemy. Just adds to the whole story, doesn't it?
It does. Reminds us, it's not simple, this good versus evil stuff. It's about perspectives, different sides of the story. People caught in the middle of these massive historical forces.
And speaking of people caught in the middle, let's talk about those berserkers again. There's such a mystery, almost mythical, with their ferocity. What can you tell us about them? Their role in Viking society, in warfare?
They were more than just warriors, you know? Almost their own class, and they had these rituals to get into that heightened state for battle, aggression, pain tolerance. It's like, imagine mixing adrenaline, religious ecstasy, maybe even some hallucinogens, all to create this ultimate warrior.
They were tapping into something primal, weren't they? Like an animalistic rage?
Yeah, totally. Even the word berserker comes from Old Norse words for bear and shirt, like fighting with the fury of a bear. And think about facing them on the battlefield, the psychological effect. These screaming, unstoppable warriors must have been terrifying.
No wonder they became legends. But were they always an asset in battle? Could their unpredictability be a problem?
That's the thing. Yeah, their ferocity could be a game changer. But they weren't exactly known for strategy, you know? And those berserker rages, they could be reckless, put their own side at risk.
So a double-edged sword. Terrifying, but unpredictable. Makes them even more interesting, I think.
Absolutely. They show this mix of warrior culture, religion, maybe even altered states of consciousness. It's not just dates and battles, you know. It's about how people experience those things, what it was like to be there.
And those experiences, that's what makes history come alive. With the Norwegian invasion, it's all there. Ambition, betrayal, courage, tragedy. Harald Hardrada and his gamble, Tostig and his revenge, Harold Godwinson fighting for his kingdom. These stories, they still mean something all these centuries later.
They do. And the events of 1066, from the Norwegian invasion to the Norman conquest, they changed everything. The future of England, of Europe, it's incredible to think about.
1 year, a few battles, and the world is different.
It really is. And it reminds us history isn't just something in the past. It's a living thing. It shapes who we are today and who we'll become.
Well said. So that wraps up our deep dive into the Norwegian invasion of England in 1066. Hope you enjoyed the journey. And keep exploring. Keep learning.
History is full of amazing stories just waiting to be discovered.
Until next time, happy history hunting.